Welcome to Starfleet Universe On Call. I am Paul France, owner of France Games. I run SWB Online, Bedcom Online, and Starfleet Warlord. Just reminder on how to join us. We have talk guest every Thursday night starting at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time. You can either join us on the phone, just dial 605-562-0444. Just follow the directions. Call ID is 17702. Or you can participate on the web. Let's go to the Talks website at www.talkshoe.com. Search for Call ID 17702 and bring your Chrome browser. And also, if you want to, you can join me on the Twitch channel, SFU On Call. So go to twitch.tv/SFU On Call, and you will find me there. I will be broadcasting. I do a co-podcast between TalkShoe and Twitch, so you can find me there, and I will be keeping an eye out on the chat room there. So, and if you need to contact me for any reason, my email address is sfuoncall@gmail.com. That's sfuoncall@gmail.com. Also, if you want to reach me via Twitter, my podcast account is sfuoncall. And my personal account is Paul France. It's PaulFranz. And if you want, also, I have a tertiary account, which is my business account, which is Franz Games, FranzGames. GMES, of course, this lovely TalkCast gets Turntable Podcast available on iTunes and various other feeds around the net. Some quick news from ADB this week. They had released they're going through the back catalog of Nexus. They're making them available as ebooks. And this week, they have available the Nexus 13 on Warehouse 23, DriveThruRPG, and Wargame Vault. Steve Cole was busy working on Call to Arms Starfleet book number 2. Looks like he's gotten through quite a bit of it. Last thing I saw on the discussion board. Also, he's busy working on the art for the Tholian Master Starship book and various other Shapeways things and other projects which are not mentioned here. Steve Petrick also is busy working on SFB updates and also the Tholian Master Starship book. And Gene, of course, was busy doing some marketing for the FedCom boosters number 37 and 38. And also some work on the Tholian Master Starship book and a future Tholian E-Pack for the Federation Commander. Moving onward to the SFB Online tournaments. Yes, Sapphire Star Tournament number 3 is now open for signups. So go to the normal signup page and you'll be able to sign up there. I will be sending out a mailing this weekend, just reminding everyone that the Sapphire Star Tournament 3 is now open and welcoming people. We already have 4 signups and they'll just got opened this afternoon. So come on, we can get 16 really quick and get the tournament underway. I will be signing up myself, so there's only 9 slots left. So just to let you know that you better get signed up in a hurry or you'll be put on the waiting list and have to wait and hope that someone else is going to drop out. And when it comes to the library report for this week, I actually went and ran the numbers. And we're actually complete conversions are up to 2,522. And yet to be converted down to 799, leaving the percent complete at 75.94%. That's like one conversion away from 76 is the way blind guess, you know, at this point it's kind of rounding and so forth. And with that, that is the news for this week. And it's me, the one and only Paul France, welcoming you to Starfleet Universe On Call. And tonight we have Barry. We also have Dave is sitting in the chat room. And currently there's no one on Twitch, but I just started the feed. So we'll just have to wait and see if anyone shows up there. But we are broadcasting this both on TalkShoe and Twitch. Whichever one you want to be part of, that's fine. Obviously, you want to chat with other people. Most of those are in the TalkShoe, but some of them actually do both. I know Dave actually enters both the Twitch stream and the chat room there and the chat room over on TalkShoe. And obviously, if you want to join us in voice-wise, you can either call us on the phone, or you can actually, you should be able to link up on the TalkShoe website, but you need to have the Chrome browser running. Otherwise, it will not work at all. So just to remind you of said fact. And with that, hey, Barry.
Hey, how are you doing?
Doing good, doing good.
So I went through my library of stuff and discovered that I did not have, apparently when I did the LMC, I had purchased Module C5 as paper many years ago. And I'd never scanned in that paper rule book. Mm-hmm. And it's like, oh, crap. So unlike the Omegas, I needed to have a copy of the rules to look at them. So it's like, okay. Because I was reading through my, I did a strategy guide, like 8 years ago. I'm rereading the strategy guide and it's saying stuff. It's like, oh, okay. And so it's like, I better buy the rules. So I bought the rules.
And not the too expensive on Warehouse 23, yeah.
That's the whole point of E23. So there's a couple of things we forgot to mention last week about the Magadium.
And what's that?
Okay, first of all, there's, the shielding is a little different than I had remembered it. So with the LMCs, you cannot do general reinforcement.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, only specific reinforcement and only the outer shields. And obviously repairing the LMC shield, they have the VRF, which makes it, they take less damage. There's less shielding, but they take less damage because of the VRF. But reinforcement is more expensive. But repair is cheaper. And not only is the inner shield repair cheaper, because that's a pretty obvious, 1 point of power, 1 point of shield box back, but the outers actually are cheaper to repair. Because even though it's 2 points of power for each box back, just like Galactics.
Right.
But remember, if you put 4 points of power in, you get two boxes back and one VRF back. So for 4 points of power, you really got three boxes back, not two.
Oh, okay. Yeah. You got a point there.
So, yeah. So reinforcement is, regeneration of your shields is
right. Repairing of the shields,
cheaper.
Yes. Yeah.
Yes, and you can put 4 points into outers and 4 points into inners on the same turn. So if you've got a lot of power, you can bring your shields back quick.
That's a good thing.
Yeah.
Some of these have pretty good power, you know, because like the Neen that we're going to be going over tonight has 42 points of power.
That's all. Correct.
Of course, it needs all those 42, but we'll get to that.
Well, I know that. Yeah, we'll get to that. The other interesting thing is that 1 point of power raises your outers, 1 point of power raises your inners. And that's a distinction that it's not like the Galactics where you have minimum shields that nobody uses because they're so weak. Mm-hmm. This one, if you can save a point of power and just raise the outers or the inners, your choice. And the outers or the inners are strong enough that it's like, if I'm not expecting the range to get too low, why not just save a point of power and not power the ones I don't think I'm going to need? And if I do get close, battery up the other the inners or the outers, depending on which I left down. So you can save a little power there.
Oh, understood. But when you drop the outers or inners, isn't there at least like maybe a quarter impulse delay?
Correct, there is.
Okay.
Yeah. So, you
Not quarter turn, not quarter impulse. I'm thinking more like four impulse delay. I'm not sure if it's four or eight.
Yeah. But like, for example, I could start the game off with the inners down.
Right.
And if I'm doing an oblique maneuver and I'm not getting into range eight, then it's like, you know. Mm-hmm. Or if I'm going against a plasma ship, which I don't expect to be able to hit me hard, or at least I'll have a lot of warning. I don't need to have both sets of shields up until I really need it.
Mm-hmm.
So you can run around for a while and save some power there.
Right, right.
And 1 point is 1 point, which is nice.
Mm-hmm. Oh, agreed, agreed.
Then I started looking at it, going, oh, the sensor scanner suites are completely different than Galactics. Also.
Oh, that, yeah, because they're actually ARC-based.
Yes, they are. So you have front FX ARC sensor scanners and RX sensor scanners. And you power them independently. And it's a half a point of power for the FXs and half a point for the RXs. So if you think you're not going to be needing one set, you don't have to power it. Mm-hmm. And that saves you a half a point of power.
Agreed.
So there's a couple of little tricks there that you can use to save a little power.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the interesting thing is that unlike the Galactics, where you're going to very unlikely to get damage to a sensor scanner, this one, 1 point of damage can actually start to cause damage. It can start
cause issues because of it's not like 6-6 when it comes to sensor ratings. It starts 6 and at least I'm looking at the Neen right now and it's like 6420.
Yeah.
And one quick question. I'm assuming are the sensors when it comes to hit, are they based on shield facing? You know, like phasers.
They are directional like phasers.
Ooh,
yes.
Boy. That can be freaking nasty. Cause just imagine you getting a sensor hit on your front sensor. Now, if their target is, sensor is for lock on. We assume that these, when you're playing Galactics, you always assume I got lock on all the time. It's not until you get down below six that you actually have to start rolling. Which means that you might not have lock on to ships that you're want to fire at if they're in your FX arc. FA arc, because of your rear, because if they have, of course we have sensors which are RX, they're probably up to six, and they're, which means automatic lock on for anything in the RX arc.
Yeah.
Dang, man.
Also means that you probably want to put guards on all those sensor scanners.
Oh, agreed. Oh, I agree there 100%. But, geez.
And it takes twice as many guards.
Right, right. But,
something I'd never considered before is like, putting guards on my sensor scanner track. Who does a hit and run raid on sensor scanner track? But now I'm thinking about it, that's probably a very legitimate target for a Galactic.
Yeah, but... here's the thing. How often do you actually have a sensor or a scanner hit in a Galactic? I'm sure that's still rare for LMC.
But what if I don't put guards there? If I've got like six-hit-run raids, it's like, I'll do them all against Sensor.
Yep.
And there's a good chance that I might take two or three of them out.
Yeah. Yeah, and
I've never considered that tactic. I've never seen it used.
Right. Oh, agree. Because the thing is, you're lucky when it comes to a hit and run raid, to even get a you get a single one, and you're able to successfully damage a sensor. On a galactic, that doesn't mean much, because even if the unlikely, because come on, hit and run raids are very unlikely as it stands. But then you have the additional unlikely to actually get to a sensor hit on the DAC.
Yeah. Right. But what I'm saying is with a galactic, it's like, okay, let's say I have six transporters and I fire and I use all six against the sensor array. And let's say I get two hits. Woohoo! That's pretty cool.
Yeah, actually, I don't.
Or maybe I do them all against the scanner array. It's like, and the other guy's like, oh crap!
Right, that's actually one thing I had to look up when it comes to hit and run raids. Is I know for some, depending upon the system, you can attack individual boxes like phasers. You can attack individual boxes.
Yeah,
but like warp power, the warp engines. You only a hit and run raid against a single system is considered a single hit and run raid. I'm not sure if you can do multiple hit and run raid attacks in the same impulse.
Right. Now, I know that one guard can protect the whole track.
Right. Which possibly means, I have to check to see if it's possible when it comes to hit and run raids, and that is that you can actually do multiple hit and run raids on the same track on the same impulse, because otherwise it makes it a heck of a lot more difficult. You know, those six transporters, yeah, you can charge them, you can use them, but it might take you six impulses to go through. You know?
Right. Yeah. And you're probably not going to have six impulses to do hit and runs. But certainly here, what the heck, you've got, each track, you could certainly hit multiple tracks. So I could use one against the sensor, one against the scanner in the front, one against the sensor, one against the scanner in the rear.
Oh, yeah.
And chances are one of them is going to hit.
Oh, agreed. When it comes to LMC, it makes a heck of a lot more sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, that's why I'm saying, you know, with Galactics are a heck of a lot harder to take advantage of. Yeah, okay.
Right. Well, the Galactics, nobody is so rare to see a sensor or scanner hit. I've never seen a ship actually have, oh my God, I've got so much damage on my sensor scanner track that it's actually affecting me.
Right.
That is like unheard of.
Yeah, there's only a couple times I've seen
but
that. And that's
here,
usually where
the only
time I see it is when the ship is so gone that it's like, okay.
Yeah, at that point, it doesn't matter.
Game's over. You know?
Yeah. But here it was kind of like, and Ken had a valid point when he created all this. It was like, you know, we've got these tracks, but it doesn't mean anything. It's a useless system. So he said, let me make it in some ways more fragile, in some ways more redundant. So I actually like that idea.
Mm-hmm. Oh, agreed. I agree. That's what Ken did overall when it comes to the LMC was new and definitely interesting and a different way of approaching system design, weapons design, defense, you know, I think it has a heck of a lot more interesting things going on than the Omegas when it comes to overall new ideas.
Yes, I agree with that. And one other minor caveat that we did not discuss with the Magadium last week was the lasers. In that,
I know we talked about
the
Magadium.
So you have, we know bank boxes are 4 points of energy held in it and all that. But one of the things that, and we talked about the fact that they damage plasmas at 3-to-1 instead of 2-to-1.
Right.
So they're not as effective against plasmas. And they're also a little less effective against drones. But, okay. But one thing we didn't discuss was, and I didn't realize that until I reread the rules tonight, was that you cannot downfire a medium laser as a light.
Oh.
Yeah.
Hmm. Which means...
medium lasers always have to...
Right. And more to the point is that you can't save power in your banks if you want to use them for defensive firing.
Correct. Although the fact that you pretty much need to fire them as a medium laser anyway, because the light lasers just don't have a good chance of taking out a drone.
Oh, and again, I don't see them. Well, in theory, they could be fighting against Galactics, but that's a rare thing. I'm more when it comes to LMC, I'm more concerned about LMC versus LMC and less against other either Galactics or Omegas.
Well, yes, but the other thing to keep in mind is that during Operation Unity, there were some LMCs that might have been fighting Galactics.
Well.
Now, usually
my understanding is that I don't think the LMC empires were overall what were fighting the Galactics. They were still just trying to survive because of the Andromedans and the Andromedan
invasion. Yeah. They would have seen the Galactics as allies. Oh, they're taking out the Andromedans who are like devastating us. Why are we ever going to fight them?
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Now, after the Andromedans are vanquished from the LMC, then I can see that there might be a possibility that there might be some conflict. But overall, I think at that point, the LMC empires are more concerned about rebuilding. And I don't think...
Yes, yeah.
Overall, the Galactic Empires are looking into expand into the LMC. At that point,
they were just there to take out the Andromedans and done.
Right now,
someone
from the Galactic Empires could try to take advantage of it. So,
yeah, I think there were a couple of scenarios where there might have been a battle or two, but it was pretty minor.
Oh yeah, because I can easily see them initially with as another set of invaders into the LMC. I can easily see that. Until they actually sat down and talked.
Right. Okay. Having said all that, now going back to the Anine. So it's got lasers, and the firing arcs of the lasers are, in fact, all its weapons, the firing arcs are very much left and right and rear.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't have too much design to fire straight forward.
That is
a ship that's designed for the oblique attack.
Oh, agreed. Especially with the neutron beams.
Yes.
Dang, man.
And the neutron beams, I'm looking at that, and that's a fleet weapon. That's not a single ship weapon.
Agreed, agreed.
It's
Well,
actually now there's
yeah, overall it can be, but it
now
can be
that.
single ship weapon, I think. Obviously, the interesting part about the neutron beams are, of course, the two different modes. For one, which one,
Yes.
which,
Yes.
how do you want to go? Do you, basically, do you feel lucky is the way I see it. With
Yeah.
the narrow beams, okay, yeah, you can get more damage in theory, like it's when you're rolling the higher numbers, but there's also the chance of you completely and utterly miss.
Yes.
So, are you
Yes.
willing to, if you happen to roll badly, actually give some damage, or do you want to say, okay, well, if I roll like in the middle, I'll actually do better. You know, which one do you
Yeah.
want? You know, that's why I call
Right.
it, do you feel lucky when it comes to the narrow beams?
Yeah.
Now, of course, the tough part about the neutron beams themselves is two things. Number one, it costs five. That's 5 points of energy.
Oh, I know. They're very expensive
And that's single turn
to
arming,
arm.
no, and there's no holding.
That's right. Although, if you discharge it, you can arm it again the following turn.
No, you
But
can't.
yeah, it's expensive to arm. You can't hold it.
No,
And
I'm.
if you do fire it, there's a cool down, just like a
Right,
fusion
exactly.
beam.
There's a cooldown period, which
And
means. Which is.
you only have two in each arc. And so they're expensive. And they really don't do that much damage.
I disagree with
Well,
that. Just be.
now the chart in the there's a PDF chart that I have that was one of the ones that Ken Burnside created, and that chart is wrong. The one in the book and the SSD book are correct.
Right, which means out to range six, they do 12 points of damage per
Yes, they
neutron
can.
beam, which, come on, that's better than an overloaded disruptor.
Yes. Narrow beam, I don't I think narrow beam does what out to range six?
So a narrow beam does
It's
12.
down.
A wide aperture beam can do 12, but it can go as low as four.
Right.
Now, the to hit
Double
a
check.
narrow beam on a range six is 1 to 4, which is not bad. Yeah, in the
Second.
LMC ebook, it's okay. What it's on page 16, where they have all the weapons charts.
Yes.
So overall, they're not bad. Okay, let me just look at something real quick, which was okay, the neutron beam. Okay, because the cooldown period was okay. Requires one turn of cooling. So basically, it's like a fusion beam in that respect that requires a single hold. After you fire it, it requires a whole turn of cooling.
Well, yeah, range six, it's got a two-thirds chance of hitting and does 12 points of damage. Yeah, I guess that's better than a disruptor.
Right, it's 50% better than a disruptor, overloaded disruptor, and it costs 1 point more than an overloaded disruptor, i.e., 25% more power. Now,
Yeah,
of course,
okay.
the tough part about this is that there is no like lower power mode, like disruptors.
No.
So that if you do a par, you in theory, if you want to, you can do a partial charge. So you can, if you want to, you can discharge.
Contingent army, yeah.
Right. You can discharge if you don't if you don't completely arm it, i.e. you don't fire it. But obviously that also uses up, you have to pre-allocate the reserve power for weapons. You know?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So if your battery is completely gets drained because of, I need to have that last point of reinforcement versus putting that last point of energy into the neutron beam because it's out of arc. That means that's four points of energy going to waste. But of course, that's better. It's better 4 points of energy going to waste than 5 points of energy going to waste.
Right, and you have two that are LFL and two that are RFR. So even though it does more than a disruptor at that range, I guess you only have half as many.
Right, right. In theory, if you centerline your enemy, yes, you can get all four. But
yeah.
Firing all four is 20 points of power. And you only have 42. Right. That's half your power is gone to this one weapon. Well, four weapons, but you get the point.
Is that if you've got them centerlined in the front, you only have three light medium lasers that bear in that arc. Your other half your medium lasers do not reach the front arc.
That is true.
Over half. Yeah. Over half of your medium lasers do not get to the front arc.
Mm-hmm. Understood. Hey, yeah. Yay! Turn mode C.
Yeah.
I only say that because of the different empires we have reviewed over the past few weeks, it seems like both the Omega and LMC, they all have a turn mode of D.
A lot of them do.
Yeah, it's like, come on. Is there anybody who actually has a ship that actually has some maneuverability? Really?
Well, not only does it have maneuverability, but it has the advantage of a frac, in that it likes to go on the oblique, which means that it doesn't need to turn as far after it's done.
Right.
That's a huge advantage. And the other thing is that it has a heck of a lot of firepower out the rear.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking about which,
if you
look at it,
there's plasma ease. Which are interesting.
Plasma E's are in the rear.
Right.
And the plasma E's, I think, are better than a plasma F. In this sense that, yes, it's costs just as much to arm a plasma E as a plasma F, but it arms in two turns instead of three.
That is true. That is true. It's like a fast-loading arming F.
Well, its first turn is cost of two, second turn is cost of three, and then it holds for free.
Right.
And it's basically a three-quarter strength plasma F.
Right.
Yeah.
And I agree. I think some of the Galactics would love to have a plasma E.
Absolutely. I've shot my wad. I'm running. Oh, I'll drop a plasma. Oh, you want to chase me? Eat a plasma.
Oh, agreed.
I could.
The plasma E's are definitely with those arcs that it has, which is the LPRs and the RPRs, they're definitely designed as a defensive weapon. You know.
Yes.
Either
that
for
is, don't
deterrent,
chase me.
Right.
I'm going to rearm.
Either a deterrent for that, or actually, do the LMC actually have any fighters? Actually, they do, because I've seen
the Magadium does. Magadian does.
Actually, yeah. Okay. Do the Magnetium have plasma ease? The only reason I mentioned that is because I noticed in the rules they actually do mention fighters and plasma ease. So it's possible that that rule was designed for like a future module for LMC where they have introduced fighters for some of the empires.
Well, hang on a second. I'm looking at the, there's a fighter refit for the Anin. So.
Yeah, that's the one thing I was going to point out. Was just,
yeah, the Anin do have fighters. So let's see what the fighters do.
What I was going to point out is that given the firing arcs, not just for don't chase me, but also for in the case of attrition units, i.e. fighters, because I don't see any mention at all of like PF/gunboats. Of course, they were pretty beat up pretty early on in their overall ship development, and they didn't have a need for gunboats and PFs for the most part. And by the time they needed them, which was when the Andromeda's attack, it was kind of too late.
Okay, the master, Anin has a PAS fighter. Mm-hmm. Its speed is 15. It has a 360 light laser. Mm-hmm. It has a plasma EFA.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
Right. So it's like...
it's basic. A Gorn fighter or something like that.
Right, or Romulan. I was thinking, yeah, that's true.
Yeah. But it's a plasma E, so it's lighter armed than a Gorn or a Rom.
Right. Plasma E versus a plasma F, yeah.
Yeah. And speed 15 is not that bad.
Oh, yeah.
You're 188, so.
Mm-hmm. Now, one thing I was actually thinking about, which is, of course, the whole issue with the LMC and the Andromedans, in that the top part for Ken when it comes to designing the LMC was to make them so they were unique in their design, but at the same time, mm-hmm. they can't be too strong because they have to be able to be defeated by the Andromedans.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
So.
Well, this ship, now the CA version, and I guess the ones we're playing with have... the plus in the year 175 refit. So that works out to about 149 BPV. And I'm just not seeing this thing being a 149 BPV ship. Mm-hmm. That's,
Oh, understood.
I just don't see it.
I would think most of that has to do with the... neutron beams.
And once you get outside of range 6, those neutron beams get half strength.
I agree.
Although at range 20, they're not bad.
Oh, agreed. 50%, if you're a narrow aperture, that's going to be 50% to hit, and it does 6 points of damage.
Yeah, out to range 20.
Out to range 20.
Yeah.
And with a wide aperture, you can go from 6 all the way down to 3. And that,
Or 0.
You can do 0 if you roll a 6. That is true.
Yeah. But your chances are that you're going to be doing 3.
Right.
So you average 3 with the wide beam.
On that distance, I would... If I was firing at that distance, which I think at that distance, what you're doing is you're doing fleet battles at that point.
You're not doing narrow.
You're doing a wide aperture at that point. Because you don't want to take the chances on missing. There's been a chance of missing completely. It's not worth it. Because the dice can be... overall, it should be 3 points of damage. Average overall. But we all know the finickiness of a die roll. We all know it. We've been there. We've all done it where we've rolled two sixes for a hellbore at range one. And we completely miss.
That's when you're going crap.
Yeah, exactly. That's why at that point, it's like, no. If I have the chance to fire at range 20 with a fleet of these things, I am not going to be letting the die gods play with me. It's like, no. They're all they'll be wide. I'll take the three. And if I roll a one, I'll take the six. But, it is what it is.
Right.
Obviously, if I'm really, I think the die roll gods will be with me. Yeah, maybe I'll go for the narrow, but I don't think so. I don't trust them. They're critically sort of gods, you know.
Yeah.
But the Elm State's. Overall, the different empires are definitely interesting because of obviously the shielding, but also as we just pointed out tonight, the sensors and scanners that they're arc based, which makes things quite when it comes to tactics. You might not think it changes that much, but it really does. Because now, for standard, tournament play, we've got 12 guards that we're allowed to assign. All of a sudden, 25% of your guards, the third of your guards are probably best suited to actually protecting your sensors and your scanners.
Yeah, that's huge.
Right. Obviously some of the other ones are kind of obvious of what you're going to use them for. And Lord knows
you want bank boxes.
I figured you're probably protecting your neutron beams and probably your plasma E's.
But you probably don't have to protect all your bank boxes because you really only need two of them, and they're cheap to repair.
That is true. Okay, how many bank boxes? Yeah. Okay, this has three bank boxes. Okay.
Three bank boxes.
That's 12 points of power.
Right. And every third phaser hit is a bank box.
Yeah, that's... Oh, that hurts, man. That just freaking hurts.
Does it, though? Well, think about this, though. You've got 7 medium lasers and 4 light lasers. So that's 11 laser boxes plus the 4 bank boxes. That's 14 laser system boxes, 14 phaser hits you can take. Heck, the Zinti can only take 12.
Yeah.
The Fed can only take 10. The Seltorian can take 12 phaser hits.
Yeah.
Who else can do 14 phaser hits before you're out of phaser systems?
Agreed.
And the most common ones to get hit, really don't affect your offensive potential. and they're cheap to repair.
Right. True. But that also means that when it comes to repairing a system box, you might be doing repairing your banks the most. And obviously, here's the gotcha for the banks. Yeah, you can take one bank hit, and you should be okay.
Yeah.
But it's that second
right.
bank hit that will really affect you, because you go from having the ability to have 8 points of power, so firing possibly 8 medium lasers or 16 light lasers. It basically will cover every single laser you have on the ship. To
yeah.
if you're down to only one phase, one bank, that's 4. You're that really limits
right.
you.
Yeah, but by the time you've taken 2 bank boxes, you've taken 4 other laser hits.
Right.
So, yeah, one bank box can probably support your remaining lasers. Because you're not going to be able to get them all in arc at once. And if you've taken 6 phaser hits, you've got some serious damage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, overall. Obviously, there's the whole Mizzy attack thing that could wipe that out pretty quickly.
It's still more, let's see.
But with VRF and the secondary shields.
Third bank box, you need to take your ninth laser hit is where you get your third bank box down.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so now I have lasers remaining and no bank boxes.
Right.
But I can repair those bank boxes pretty quickly. So, okay. On the other hand, I have starting off, I have 12 power stored in my lasers. Nobody else
stored in your banks, yeah.
Phaser. Nobody else has a phaser capacitor of 12.
Right.
The self is got 10.
Oh.
And that's huge.
Mm-hmm. Very true. Very true.
Yeah. So you've got 42 power on the ship. Now, there's another place where you're vulnerable. You probably want to put guards on your HPRs. Because
right.
if you... there's another place to do a hit-and-run raid. Because that could change it.
Well, actually, yeah, but, okay. For normal play, yeah. But chain reactions are not in tournament play. So if you're playing this in a tournament.
Oh, they're not?
No, they're not. We don't do chain reactions.
Oh, well. Okay. Still, the HPRs, I don't. What's the cost of repair of an HPR?
4.
4? Just mm-hmm. like an APR?
Yep.
Oh. But certainly that's one to take out because it gets 2 points of power.
Oh, agreed there. Agreed there. And especially with a power-hungry ship. You know? Meaning because those neutron beams just...
Oh, yeah.
They just suck the
they
power
are,
up.
Yeah, they are the... Although, to tell you the truth...
Oh yeah,
you're probably not going to be firing more than 2 in a turn.
That's
only 10 points of power.
Yeah, that's true. I was just thinking about that myself, and I agree that most probably you're only going to be firing 2 of them, which is 10, which is not too bad.
Yeah.
But at the same time, that just that also limits the amount of damage you can actually do to your opponent.
Yeah. You can't afford to fire them all. And you can't get them all in arc anyway.
Right. Well, you, as I said, you can, if you centerline them, yeah, you can. It's a rare instance because that's obviously your opponent's going to be doing its best not to get centerlined.
Right.
But you should be able to do it every once in a while. But at that point, the question is, will you have the power to fire them? All four of them, that is.
You're not going to be going very fast.
Exactly. That's the thing. It's one of those times that you have to be not moving very fast, and probably I would think you'd have to control the center of the board at that point, so that you can go at a slower speed and still get the center line.
Yeah, the other thing is that if you're doing four of them in one turn, A, you're not going fast, and B, you have to, your plasmas are out of arc, and most of your light medium lasers are out of arc. That's not where you want to be.
Yeah, well, but at the same time, since the neutron beams can do a heck of a lot more damage than the medium lasers, because the medium lasers, let's look at them at range 6, maximum of range of 4 points of damage per.
Yes.
And you can get on the oblique, you can get 4 to hit. Now that's going to be a little less than a neutron beam, if assuming that neutron beam hits and that's narrow. No, there's two pretty big ifs there. I agree.
Right.
But at the same time, you know, if you got center lined, you know, you're gonna take that chance, because if you can get at range 6 and you get the 12 points of damage at range 6, that's 48 points of damage. That's that's gonna hurt.
Yeah. It is. But you can't do it again the following turn.
That is true.
Because there's a cooldown.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That is true. That is the one downside about if you fire all four in the same turn, which is you have to wait for your I was going to say weaponless, you know. But that's not the case. It's just,
well, you turn, you run, and if he chases you, you start dropping plasmas.
Right. Agreed.
You're not weaponless.
Right. Oh, yeah. That's why I was about to say it, and I realized I was being foolish.
And the other thing is that if you're running and you're not charging the neutron beams, you got real quick, real fast.
That is very true.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let me see. Probably be max. Yeah. Assuming that you're not charging anything else. Meaning that you're just doing housekeeping and you're moving as fast as possible.
Yeah.
And you fire your neutron beams. And basically, so that your banks are full, your plasma E's are ready, you know, there's sort of zero holding. Your max speed is going to be like 18. Because that close, you're gonna have normal shielding up.
Yeah,
you can, in theory, you could save half a point, but it's not going to give you any more power, any more speed, because it's only half a point.
Right. Yeah. So you're going 18, but, you know, is somebody going to be chasing you down when you're dropping plasmas at them?
Oh, agreed. I agree. And 18 is actually good for as I said, the situation where you might get a center line, which to me means that you are in the center of the board. Your opponent is running around the outside of the board. That's when you could actually get center line. At least that's the way I feel about it.
Mm-hmm.
If you're on the outside and your opponent's chasing you, you're never going to, that's not going to happen. In which case, then becomes the whole issue, the fun issue, which I had to deal with, which is, okay, you're probably firing the same two again and again and again because of you're probably going to go round and round and round each other the same direction. Because the toughest part about, yeah, you know, the battle passes overall, especially when you have two opponents that are tight, you know, they're not going to go off, mm-hmm, to their little corner of the board and repair their ship and come back.
Right.
Where you want to keep up the heat against your opponent. You're just going to go round and round and round and round. Tough part is going round and round. Okay, I need to change shields now. I can't go round and round, mm-hmm, have my down shield number two. You know, I need to be on my shield number six. Mm-hmm. Changing directions is not easy if you don't want to use your head. Obviously, you can use your head, but then, okay, you just use your head and you're in trouble. You know, you decide that,
yeah,
what your emergency get-out-of-jail-free card is now gone.
Right. So that's it's very expensive to be able to fire all four neutron, right, beams. What you may end up doing is coming in, say, on the left or the right side, not have them center line, fire two neutron beams, turn into him, bring the other two into arc, mm-hmm, and fire them.
Right.
And I've seen that kind of maneuver also.
Oh, yeah. The funny thing
about that ship, mm-hmm, is the number one shield is probably going to be the one that that's the one you don't want to protect. That's the one you don't need.
Understood. Oh,
if that ship is fighting out with number one shield, it's doing something wrong.
Oh, understood that, you know, most of the time it won't be, you know. But
yes, in fact, it would have made sense to reverse things and have the numbers 3, 4, and 5 shields be stronger and the 1, 2, and 6 shields be weaker. But that's not the way it's designed.
Right, right. Yeah, because still you want that strong shield number one, because that's going to be facing your opponent, you know, when you come in. Obviously, mm-hmm, your opponent's going to want to wait for the side shield. But I agree when it comes to the whole idea of the firing and then turning it and firing the other side. I agree with that, especially if you can time it, to be, mm-hmm, over a turn break, where you hit them. Especially the first battle pass is relatively simple for that to do, assuming that your opponent cooperates to a certain degree where he also comes straight in. And so you're both within combat range before, mm-hmm, the end of the turn. The latter quarter. Now, obviously, after you turn, your opponent's also going to turn and bring up a new shield.
Right.
So, you know, that's the reason why you want a center line, is because you can get all the damage on a single shield.
Yeah.
But at the same time, as you pointed out, the having only firing two per turn means you always have two available for you on any turn. Now, the question is, obviously, do you want to be charging your neutron beams every single turn?
Right. Because you can't.
Well, in theory, you can. You can fire, you can charge.
No, there's a cooldown.
Yeah, but no, you can charge two of them every single turn. But do you want to spend the money to charge them? Charge two of them every single turn.
It's not a bad place to be. I mean, if you think about it, it's 10 points of power. That's a little bit more than a Klingon spends on non-overloads. You've got 42 power.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I agree. But at the same time,
moving pretty fast.
Yes, if you're going to keep the pressure on your opponent and you plan on attacking every single turn, yes, charging it is a good idea. But if you ever kind of take a break from combat, you know, ease back a little bit and repair, assuming that your opponent will allow you to, you know, maybe mm-hmm. the 10 points of power is better put into like reinforcement. That's all I'm saying.
Repair on that. Repair is cheaper on that ship than reinforcement.
Understood.
Yeah, they inverted that paradigm on galactic ships. Reinforcement's cheap, repair is expensive. This one, it's the opposite.
Mm-hmm. But at the same time, the whole idea of reinforcement is to prevent internals to your ship. You know, if you don't have as much...
Well, yes.
But I understand that the VRF, the volley reduction factor... should help to alleviate some of that issue. That's the whole idea of the volley reduction factor, is so that those big volleys, I forget what is the idea is to reduce those big volleys and mm-hmm. force you to use smaller volleys. So the VRF isn't as big.
Yeah. And the VRF is... That ship actually wants to dance, kind of like a plasma bug. It's the direct fire equivalent of a plasma ballet, although it does have plasma, so it can successfully do the ballet.
Right. The weird part is that the plasma E's and their firing arcs remind me of the ISC.
Yes, they do.
You know, it's kind of a combination of seeking and direct fire weapons, kind of like what the ISC is. I mean, main weapons, they're heavy weapons. You know, obviously, you know, you can say that about a Sinti, where it's got the drones and the Disruptors.
Yeah.
But, you know, drones are drones. They're easily mm-hmm. knocked down, but you usually have more of them, which means, you know, even more, and more importantly, they last longer.
Mm-hmm.
You know? That's why especially drones, I consider them mobile terrain. You know, the whole idea is to control your movement of your opponent. So I think with that, we will wrap up this evening. Barry, it's been a pleasure talking to you.
Same here. Yeah, same here.
And
Batavai for next week.
What one for next week?
The Batavai?
Batavon sounds good to me. Okay, then we'll do that.
Okay. Okie doke.
See you next week.
See you.
Okay, bye.
Bye.
So we had a nice little discussion about the Anin and also some corrections to our LMC understanding. Unfortunately, I had not looked up all those things that Barry had previously mentioned, when it comes to the shield. And so I was also in the dark. So I was going from Barry's memory. I was more concerned about the weapon systems and so forth for the Makadim last week. And I was focusing this week also on the weapon systems and overall power of the ship. The Anin, I think, are quite an interesting empire. The ship design, as I said, it reminds me of the ISC. It's very good for attacking, and obviously it has good defense both against your opponents, because unlike the ISC, the plasma E's on the ship, on this lovely ship here, they're not limited when it comes to firing. So they're not specifically designed for fighting attrition units. They're designed for defense, in my mind, because of the firing arcs. Simple. Yes, you can use them in an oblique attack, but at the same time, you wouldn't, overall, why use that as part of your main attack, except for in the case of if you want to, per se, have it so that, either the whole idea of firing drones so that you're behind, you're either leading them or they're in front of you, in which case the opponent has to make a decision. Now the tougher part, obviously, with the plasma E is their arcs, in that in theory, yeah, you can basically fire and then you can turn away and then launch a plasma E and basically discourage your opponent from deciding to actually follow behind you. And I think that actually is a very good tactic overall when it comes to a battle pass in the Anin. So that would be probably the best approach. Now the question is that, like any other plasma, do you run it out, let it hit your shield, and then keep on coming? Obviously, if you do that, you can launch the other plasma E. But you only could do that so many times before you're out of plasma E's when you're doing a battle pass. It still takes two turns to arm a plasma E. Obviously, you can, if you trade on and off every single turn when it comes to the number of neutron beams, on and off, go from left side to right side, you're good. You can actually keep that up, left side, right side, and one plasma E, and just keep on going back and forth. And that actually would be an overall good strategy. Now, of course, the question is whether your opponent will let you do that. My guess is, no, at some point, you're going to get into a situation where that will not work anymore. Obviously, he's going to want to try to keep on the one side where you already have launched weapons. And so they only have to face your medium lasers and your light lasers at that point. So, with that, I am Paul Franz, and I bid you a good night.